This is a segment from The Annex, an academic sociology-themed podcast. For more, visit us on the web at theannexpodcast.com. So there's this piece that I wanted to discuss in the Washington Post by Elizabeth Bruning called This is U.S. Politics, Are You Triggered? And it was published on November 28th. And the article describes a new triggering style in U.S. politics. And it's something that, Gabriel, you were talking about, I think, was it last year when we did our segment on inviting Milo Yiannopoulos to UCLA?
Something like that.
Yeah, something like that. So basically, the triggering style, it's a style of political dialogue where the goal is to infuriate those who disagree with you. So as an example, Bruning gives this example of reactions to the migrant children crying about being separated from their parents at the southern U.S. border. So one style of politics might dispute whether or not, like, this is really happening or whether or not it's representative. So, like, there's a style of arguing where you're disputing the fact. Or maybe another style might be to acknowledge that these separations happen, but to justify them, you know, say it's necessary to defend the border, whatever. The triggering style would be to respond in a way that is designed to infuriate those who are angry about the separation. So you might be like, yeah, I love seeing children cry. It was the highlight of my Thanksgiving, or something like that. And there's no effort to convince the person who you're talking to, right? There's no effort to criticize. The goal is to emotionally trigger someone and push them to the point that they're screaming, name-calling, and all that. And either you just relish the suffering of those with whom you disagree, or maybe you use their behavior, their reaction, to discredit them. And it's certainly something that happens on both sides of the political spectrum. It's definitely a style that's advanced by academics. Do you remember last year we did a segment on George Sicariello? I think it was Sicariello Meyer, that political scientist who said he wanted white genocide for Christmas, or that he threw up when someone gave their seat to a veteran. And then he got onto Tucker Carlson and he became an object of hate on the right and got a flurry of death threats. And then he had to resign his tenured position at Drexel. Remember that guy?
Yep.
So like, it's like, so it's all, yeah, everybody. So it's around and it's popular. And so I have a question. For one is, do you see this triggering style? Is this a thing that's commonplace, or is this just another example of like a journalist who's trying to get 600 words of content off of five people's tweets? Like, is this really a thing, or are we blowing this up?
Oh yeah, it's definitely a thing. There's whole websites where this is their business model. And, you know, there's kind of like this weird, your mention of Tucker Carlson and Sicariello, I think it was Sicariello Mayer, yeah, or something like that. Anyway,
whatever, something like that.
There's this weird like symbiotic feedback that you see of, you know, people who kind of love to hate each other.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you'll see kind of, so let's just say, people with left-wing views expressed intemperately, they're not necessarily going to appear on MSNBC. They're going to appear on Fox.
Right.
Because, you know, it's you got to have somebody to fight with.
Right. Like, they're not going to quote Ann Coulter in the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah.
Or in, like, the National Review.
And in fact, yeah, and Ann Coulter has actually not been welcome in the most kind of mainstream kind of highbrow publications since shortly after 9/11. Like, she was actually fired by National Review about 2 weeks after 9/11. And she
has. Was it for a particular issue or?
Oh, yeah. She said that in response to 9/11, we should invade their countries, kill their leaders, and convert them to Christianity.
Oh.
And National Review fired her and hasn't had a piece from her since.
So I got a question. Is this like, so this sounds to me like civility in politics. Like, is this what we're trying to avoid when we ask for civility in politics? Like, it's a shame Leslie's not here to talk about that. Maybe we'll have to follow up with her. But like, is this?
Well, I think that's a little different. And I don't think Liz herself is like a civility monger. And in fact, I know that she would criticize civility mongers and say, like, basically, you're saying shouldn't get mad about stuff that they have a right to be mad about. I think her point, which does not contradict her general contempt for civility as a principle in of itself, is there's a difference between being intemperate and being the whole point of what you're saying is to upset the other person. Like, right. There's a difference between me saying something that upsets you, really believe it, and me doing like deliberately trolling you and saying you mad, bro. And she's really talking about the latter.
Right. The you mad bro type of thing.
Yes.
Is it, Rebecca, is this catching on in Canadian politics now? I've been out of the loop for quite a while. Or is this something that's an American beast?
We like to think that we're really polite up here. But I think that that this has been this maybe triggering or baiting or just sort of saying things that are deliberately provocative is something that is fostered, I think, partly through a lot of the anonymity online. Hmm. And also, I think you're completely correct that it's partly about this sort of shock value and sort of media outlets picking up on the shock value and knowing that viewers are going to be drawn to reading articles based on that. And
right.
we're just like Americans in terms of those kinds of things, right? We're reading a lot of American news and drawn to, you know, oh my gosh, what did they say now?
The clickbait.
I got to read this article, you know? And so, you know, while we might not have as many people sort of doing the baiting, I think certainly we're, jumping on it in the same kind of way and increasing the popularity of it and feeding into it.
So like what's going on with this? How, like, what does it say about our society that the triggering style of politics is sort of becoming, you know, a major form of political dialogue in society? What's that saying about us, where we are as a society?
Well, I think it's epiphenomenal, the general trend in negative partisanship.
Okay.
So if you look at the work of people like Iyengar and Westwood, they found that partisanship is at, you know, levels not seen in the modern survey era. Mm. Although, you know, obviously partisanship was higher in the 19th century in this country because the two parties fought a war against each other.
Yeah, that's pretty partisan.
Yeah. So, but the, but, you know, we do have this intense negative partisanship, and it's, people use the term negative partisanship rather than partisanship because it's not so much that I love my party and their agenda, it's that I hate and fear your party.
Right.
And this is one way that you can, like, motivate voter turnout, where it's like, look, you know, so let's say that you're talking to an evangelical Christian and you're trying to convince them to show up and vote for some guy who you just heard a tape saying, well, you got to grab him by the pussy. And the way you're going to do that is you're going to say, and it would not be an implausible argument to make, that if Clinton gets elected, then this, that, and the other thing's going to happen that would terrify you. Mm-hmm. And so however much you don't like your guy and are unenthusiastic about your guy, and, you know, in late 2016, evangelicals were still pretty unenthusiastic, although to a certain extent they flipped by now. Mm-hmm. They, you know, you're just going to say, well, it doesn't matter because the other person's much worse. And so there's a certain way in which politics is about hating the other side. And this is just kind of like the fun and games version of that. That one way to engage in political discourse is to kind of mock the other side. And there's also something to it of, it's simply fun to see a blowhard get upset, right? You can't have the Marx Brothers without having Margaret Dumont. And there are a whole lot of Margaret Dumonts in our culture. Now, I don't think the kind of thing of Liz's example of people basically being excited about tear gas is a case of that, because I don't think it's unreasonable for people to be upset about tear gas in the first place. But there's plenty of cases. And this, I think, is fundamentally why college kids love to invite Milo, where there are absolutely ridiculous aspects of campus politics and people just saying really stupid things. And, you know, making you feel like, you know, you're not allowed to state your own opinion in the discussion section of your sociology class or whatever. And so it's fun to piss them off and almost like get retaliation. And so that's why you see college kids doing the childish thing of saying, you know, let's invite Milo and he'll say something that offends all these people who annoy us.
Trigger the libs.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Or own the libs or trigger the libs, one or the other. Yeah.
For more, visit us on the web, theannexpodcast.com.